This is The Hollywood Outsider, a weekly movie and TV podcast, which can be found at thehollywoodoutsider.com. We have a new episode every Tuesday now. This is episode 184, and this week we are discussing upcoming releases, including Ex Machina and The Longest Ride. We're going to have spoiler-free reviews of Furious 7 and Ex Machina. After our normal show, we will have a Furious 7 spoiler cast. The From the Outside In topic this week: should prominent actors be replaced when they leave for whatever reason from a film or TV series? Latest movie and TV news, as always, including our own trivia segments. My name is Aaron Peterson, and joining me today are my fellow host, Scotty Clark.
How's it going, Aaron?
Great. I'm learning how to speak today.
Yeah?
Justin McCumber?
I think it's pronounced Machina.
Yeah, it is.
It's Machina. It's Machina.
I think it's Machina.
It's Macarena.
I think it's Machete.
Hey, Ex Machina.
And Brian Williams.
What is happening?
Oh, not much, man. Just learning how to speak Greek or Spanish, or I'm not even sure which language it is anymore. I've lost Latin. Count.
Whatever.
Mm-hmm. So what's new with everybody? What's shaking? What's hopping?
I got to go back to work tomorrow.
Oh, that's right. You're a teacher, therefore you had a ridiculous amount of time off for no reason.
Yeah, I did.
Was that awesome?
It was awesome. I'm not going to lie.
Did you do anything?
No.
Actually, I took my cats to the vet multiple times. I had two cats that needed to go to the vet and one that needed to go to the groomer. So three different trips with felines in my vehicle. It was not a whole lot of fun.
Good.
First world problems, right. Yo.
Yeah.
Serves you right for enjoying time off.
Yeah.
Did anybody do anything actually entertaining? Because this sounds like a horrible week.
Reorganize my living room. Put the TV over the fireplace where my wife has been wanting it for years. So
nice.
Had my brother come over to help me do that. And unfortunately, because of the way the room is set up, my existing Onkyo surround sound had to go, and we replaced it with a Polk Audio sound bar. But amazingly, that sound bar has got a really robust sound to it. So
I've got a Bose sound bar that's I love it.
A lot of sound in really a tiny package.
Absolutely.
Okay, then.
Like my junk.
Your junk makes a lot of noise?
It does. You want to hear it?
Yes.
Is it like a,
yes,
we is do. It like a mechanical noise?
It is. Oh, like a Machina noise. Very, very much. It sounds like the smoke monster when I get it going.
I want a spoof that's called Ex Machina. I really do.
The smoke monster? So it sounds like a dot matrix printer from the
80s? It does. It's weird. I don't know why it does that.
Did you guys hear Muppet TV shows in the works?
Scott? I don't give a shit.
Hey, some people do. Scott's a big Muppet fan.
Why wouldn't I be excited? I think that sounds cool. Something to look forward to watch on network that's not like a procedural. You know what I mean? Or that you have to watch every week. Just fun to sit down and watch.
Now, would you watch it?
Yeah, absolutely. I would watch it.
Every week you would watch? I mean, do you want it to be like it used to be where it was a variety thing and you got...
Yeah. Like almost like sketches with puppets and they have like a celebrity guest. I think that sounds awesome. I'd watch that in a heartbeat.
There's a lot of people that are really excited about the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Not Justin, like apparently. Get off my lawn.
Kid shit, meh.
It seems like the next logical step after the movie reboots. I mean, they didn't do super well in the box office, but people seem to talk about it a lot and really like it. It just didn't make a whole lot of money, so TV seems to be a good spot for it.
I think it'd be a good kids show. I mean, family show. Maybe not even kids show. Family show.
You can toss in enough adult humor that's you know kind of subtle to make it entertaining for the adults too. It wouldn't be hard. It worked 30 years ago or 35 years ago, however, 40 years, Jesus. But you could make it work to make it entertaining for kids. But a good family show that, like I say, it's there's a little bit dashed in there for the adults who kind of can chuckle to themselves and give each, you know, the adults can look at each other and go, yep, you get it. While the kids just kind of laugh because everybody else is laughing.
I like it. Deadpool is officially rated R. I wasn't really that worried about it, even though I'm a huge Deadpool fan. Was anybody freaking out about this one way or the other? Because you always know you'll get the unrated cut at some point.
It's nice to know that Marvel is willing to, and the people at Fox, you know, are willing to put an R rating on a comic book movie, which they so far have really been reticent to do. But, and for the character, it's appropriate. But, you know, I'm not one of those people that sits here and frets over a difference between a PG-13 and an R rating. But that does make us a lot different than most of the internet, which seems to be out searching for things to bitch and whine about.
Anybody else care? I mean, and it's going to impact box office dollars. It's not going to make as much money. I think it's been proven it probably won't.
With Deadpool, though, Deadpool is one of those that I don't know would draw the same crowd. Deadpool, I mean, I understand that, like, Iron Man wasn't well-known before Iron Man hit the theater and that kind of stuff, but Deadpool is kind of an out-there character in terms of broad appeal. And don't you think that the people that are going to want to see Deadpool on the screen are the ones that are going to want to see it rated R?
I'm a diehard Deadpool fan, man. I definitely think it should be rated R just because it belongs in that world. But I also think that I could see it as PG-13 because I know I'm going to get the unrated cut on Blu-ray. And I'm more concerned that it's going to make enough to have more Deadpools. That's my main concern.
Well, I mean, when's the last time Marvel struck out, though? My honest question.
It's not Marvel. It's Fox.
It's been a while.
No, it's Fox.
Oh, okay.
So, I mean, it's not a Marvel thing. I mean, it is a Marvel property, but it's one of those that is owned by Fox. So therefore, they've struck out several times.
Okay. Well, that makes a big difference for me, then.
It's one of those things. Deadpool is a small enough actor. I think the majority of the people that are going to go see it are those hardcore Deadpool fans. And, of course, you're going to get some that want to go see it because it's Ryan Reynolds. But I know it probably hurts the box office numbers to a certain extent, but I think you just got to have it as an R-rated movie. This has been one of my issues with the Wolverine movies. As much as I like them, they just seem like they're pulling their punches, so to speak, because they can't be as graphic as they need to be in some circumstances. And I know Hugh Jackman has said it's better as PG-13 and blah, blah, blah. I know all that. And yes, the numbers do support the PG-13 rating versus the R rating. But, you know, these are very violent, dark, gritty characters that, you know, you need blood. You need gore. That's one of the reasons people are drawn to these characters. So give them what they want. I mean, if you're going to, you know, don't just go halfway. Like, hey, we're giving you what you want, but it's going to be toned down. And, you know, we're going to kind of, you know, we're not going to give you everything you want.
I'm with you, Brian, but I'm also thinking from the studio's aspect. I mean, they're in the business of making money. And that group that's going to go see it for that reason is much smaller than a PG-13 group. That's what they're looking at. I'm with you. I want to see an R-rated Deadpool. You know what I mean?
I'm telling you, the Deadpool audience themselves is very small. It's not
that's
what I'm saying.
a huge property. So the only reason that I would want it to be, and I really don't, I prefer an R, so I'm happy they're doing it. But I really want, you know, if this works, I really want more Deadpool, and I'm worried that if it doesn't, then we might not get any more.
So you're willing to sacrifice the R rating in lieu of having more Deadpool films?
I will tell you, the Wolverine movie that came out 2 years ago with Hugh Jackman had the PG-13 cut, which I thought was extremely well done. It was very visceral. It felt very close to Wolverine. And then several months later, the unrated cut came out, and that was the complete movie I wanted. So, you know, the first Wolverine part of it that came out in the theaters was successful. It was a hit. Guaranteed I got a third Wolverine. And then I got the movie, the complete package, later on home video. So for me, I kind of won twice. And I think if they would have released an R-rated version of that Wolverine movie, it wouldn't have made nearly as much. Because a lot of people's parents, believe it or not, won't take their kids.
Mm-hmm.
They'll just wait until it comes on home video and then let them do whatever they want.
They feel less guilty that way? Or
I think so. Yeah. Parents suck.
That's what I'm saying.
Mm-hmm. Real quick, apparently the Twin Peaks reunion on Showtime is still happening, but David Lynch has walked due to not enough money in the budget for his liking.
I loved his response, by the way. It's just like something about, I wanted to go in the direction that I wanted to with the story, but blah, blah, blah. I don't know. It just sounded like a real fancy way of saying it. I wasn't getting enough money.
Well, it wasn't him. I mean, he said the budget. I don't know if that is hit the budget for his, you know, he wasn't getting enough green M&Ms or what, but he's walking.
Those are pretty cheap. I think they could supply him with those.
Dude, you got to like pick them out of the bag and you got to hire somebody to do that. That takes time. Justin, you were looking forward to Twin Peaks. Do you care if he's attached?
Yeah, I fucking care. I mean, he's a guy who created it. He was a creative genius behind it. I hate that he's no longer attached to it. And I'm afraid that this is going to result in a lower quality product, but I'm still willing, if Showtime is still going to make it, and if they're willing to find a replacement who has the skills and wherewithal to handle it, I'll still watch it. But I do take this as a bad sign.
I think a lot of people do. It's making a lot of people very, very nervous.
As it should.
Machete is getting a third go-round, even though the previous movie was a huge flop.
Brian, I think that's Machina is getting a third go-round.
No, it's Machete. Machete is getting a third go-round.
No, it's Machete.
No, it's Machete.
It's Machete. Is
you throw a little Forrest Gump in there?
Yeah, I did.
I love you, Machete.
Do you think Robert Rodriguez is making these as a favorite of Danny Trejo at this point?
Golly, man, it almost seems like it. Like, you know, like, hey, Danny, have you got any offers lately? I mean, I know the Snickers money, you know, has got to be running out pretty soon. You know, yeah, you know, me and Michael Madsen are hanging out. Neither one of us have done jack over the last couple of weeks. So, you know, how about another Machete movie? Yeah. And now they're going to space. So apparently they're going to be working on it later this year. I don't know how on earth this gets done, but you know, Robert Rodriguez makes things happen one way or another. I don't know how much of his own money he's putting into this. And
I looked, he hasn't had a hit movie in years. You know that? And he still keeps cranking them out. Sequels to bombs he's making. I don't understand it.
He just makes them cheaply.
As far as your bigger, you know, your more, I guess your bigger name actors, he can really do more with I guess little. You know, than just about any other director out there. So maybe that's what it is. I haven't crunched the numbers as far as, you know, his budgets for his movies versus what they've grossed and the, you know, some of that stuff. So the only thing I can guess is that he's keeping the budget total low, giving them a decent return on the majority of them. And, you know, that's the only thing I can think of because, you know, Machete 2 was just bad.
It was.
Bad.
And I love the first one. I thought the first one was great, but it's like one of those, it's the joke is done. Let it die.
Yeah, that was definitely a one and done series for me.
It's like Ernest scared like number 12.
That's what she said. That's what Machete is becoming.
No.
Yes, it is. Absolutely.
It still works.
No, it doesn't. Yeah. It really doesn't. It only works
at frat still houses. Works just as good as anything with Fast or Furious in the title.
That's right.
Scott, let's move on. Do you want to see Plato the movie? Because Bridesmaids and spy director Paul Feig is making Plato the movie. I can't even say it without laughing.
I don't want to see it, but I don't think this is by any stretch going too far. I mean,
really?
No. Because, dude, when we talked about the Lego movie, we're like, really a Lego movie? You know, at some point, we got to all sit back and realize, you know, that not all movies are made for us. This is a great thing for kids. There's an audience.
Is it going to be claymation?
I've seen that joke about 60 times, Brian, but thanks for bringing it back.
I haven't. So that's all. So it's new to me, baby. I'm still an innovator.
Play-Doh is what's great for kids. You're right. Can't shit on it until you see it.
But I mean, it's not like there's not an audience for this. I mean, look at the success and quality that the Lego movie turned out. I can't see how this is going to be a bad thing. Even like I said, the Lego movie was good because it was able to appeal to adult audiences and kid audiences. But it's okay to have a movie once in a while that's just for kids that doesn't appeal to the parents. You know what I mean?
You're right.
I mean, the
you won. Collect your ribbon, goddamn.
quit punching him, Scott. For Pete's sake, let him up.
It feels so good.
We agree. You're right. Damn it, there's movies for everybody. Unless it's Disney. Because apparently they decided they want to remake every single property in their animation catalog as a live action tale because of, well, not even really following the success of Cinderella because they were doing it before. At last count, we got Beauty and the Beast, Dumbo, The Jungle Book, Mulan, Winnie the Pooh, and we already have Cinderella, Maleficent, and Alice in Wonderland. Yes, I realize there's a lot of money in it and people will go see them, but Justin, do you think Disney is diluting their own brand by doing this?
If they hadn't diluted it when they were doing straight to video sequel after sequel, I don't think they're in fear of doing so now. Disney is just their factory, and this is what they do. I also think that they're really helped by the fact that new generations are constantly on their way who haven't seen these movies. And
exactly.
I'm sure that in 10 or 20 years, when holograms are injected into your brain, they'll redo them in that format too. And for those kids, it'll be something all new and fresh. But to us, it'll be yet another iteration. No, I don't think they're diluting their brand. I think that with the quality that they've put into these live action versions, even someone like me who knows these movies, not backwards and forwards, but pretty damn well, I'm still kind of excited to see what they do with the live action versions.
Does it worry that they're doing so many at once? Like, it feels
no,
like the whole
because
catalog.
I'm not going to see them all. I mean, I'm not going to see Dumbo. I'm not going to see The Jungle Book. I'm not going to see Winnie the Pooh. You know, Beauty and the Beast and Mulan are really about the only two that really kind of interest me. But I don't think that – I trust that the people at Disney know what they're doing because they've been doing it for an awfully long time.
I don't think diluting is the right word. I think maybe – I would probably say like reinvigorating. Like kind of like what Justin said. I mean, there's a whole new audience of kids that have not watched the animated movies. And those don't hold up as well for a younger audience like they did for us. Those came out, you know, even when I watched them in like the 80s and in early 90s, some of them were already old, but it still worked for us because we didn't have the computer graphics and we weren't so used to these higher scale movies. And the hand-drawn animation just isn't going to work for a newer audience as well as it worked for us, I think.
Here's why I say diluting. When I was younger, my kids would watch the animated classics, and you would only see, they would only release them like every five years or something like that, and then they would be
It was longer than that. It was like every like decade or more. Oh. I mean, it was a really long time. Yeah,
whatever it was an extremely long period of time, and you couldn't find it anywhere. So it always felt to me like, I don't know, it always felt more special. Their films always felt more classical than other animated films that, you know, you see by the hundreds, it feels like. Their films felt special. And now I think you're losing a lot of that, and it doesn't feel like that anymore. And their animated classics are kind of, all right, well, now we're getting live action. Now we've had the sequels that we've gotten in the last few years before the live action hit the multiplex. It's actually, for me, it's kind of killing the brand a little bit. I guess that's just my problem, but that is how I feel.
No, I agree with you. I mean, because that was kind of like thing when you would kind of look forward, if you got word ahead of time about Bambi being released on, you know, DVD or Blu-ray or something like that, like, oh, well, hey, this hasn't been available for purchase in, you know, X amount of years. Or, you know, Beauty and the Beast or Little Mermaid or something. You know, I actually made it. I remember when those were coming out on disc, it was like, okay, I'm going to make a point to buy this because I don't know how long it's going to be on the shelves. And, you know, God knows where my VHS player is at this point. So,
I still got one. You're going to borrow it. Two of them.
All right. So it was just one of those things to where, you know, there is that. I mean, it's that nostalgia thing, I think. And, you know, you lose that with, okay, all right, well, we're getting revamped versions and it's re-releases and live action redos of it. And I'm not saying they won't be done well, but I just don't see it being as special as the original. And I'm sure there's some 8-year-old kid who's going to see it, and that's their main their first experience with a live action Mulan, and they're going to love it. And that, I guess that's great. But
I think the diluting will come from not so much diluting the actual brand of itself, but just because there's so much stuff out there for kids now. When those movies came out, there wasn't, you know, just ungodly amounts of children's movies and children's series and Cartoon Network and this kind of thing. There's just so much stuff out there. Whereas back in the day, that was all we had. Those were the primary things that we watched, were either Disney movies or PG or PG-13 movies that were, you know, above our age level.
Oh no, we had other stuff, man. you were in your little box or whatever, yeah, maybe, under the stairwell. Maybe. And we had all kinds of stuff. But Disney was like the one thing you only got a little piece. You got like a little taste of it. It was like crack. Yeah, you had to go.
Yeah, whatever their marketing plan was for decades, it worked. And maybe we've just kind of outgrown that, you know, because I mean, like I said, you wouldn't see movies like Bambi or The Fox and the Hound and those kind of things or, you know, 101 Dalmatians. You wouldn't see those available for years upon years. And it just, like I said, it made it a little bit more special. Now, whatever, we're just, you know, everything's being whored out by Disney, Marvel included.
And soon Star Wars and everything else. I personally, to me, please, no offense to anybody, but this just sounds like old guys bitching.
Hey, you're an old guy.
I'm an old guy too, but I don't mind. I don't think that I have the same love for Disney that maybe you do, Aaron. So this it's not as close to my heart as it is to yours. And so it's easier for me to be a little cavalier with my attitude towards it. But, you know, they're still making money hand over fist with these new movies. So obviously it's working for them. People are going to see it. People are really enjoying it. I mean, if the audience is there and they're willing, then why not feed them what they want?
Wasn't a question of that. It was just a matter of, are they diluting their own library by doing it? That's all. But we've already covered it ad nauseum. But you were an old guy about the Muppets. Old guy.
Hey, star shit.
You sound like the old guy on the Muppets.
He was like the Waldorf and Statler or whatever. They used to sit up in the...
Yeah, exactly. Do that, Justin. Make that noise.
Spot on.
I am to please.
All right. Well, since we don't have any trailers this week, you can watch these trailers and those from recent episodes at thehollywoodoutsider.com. If there's anything you want to talk to us about, tweet us at @H_outsider or go on to facebook.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Join our group, join our page, join in all the interaction and stuff. It's lots of good times. And you can also email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com.
We have got two upcoming attractions that we're going to be discussing this week. The first one, Ex Machina. I'm just going to go.
Ex Machina.
I'm going to go ahead and just call it Ex Machina. The true pronunciation, Aaron, we may never know. It's like how many licks it takes to the center of a Tootsie Roll Pop. Written and directed by Alex Garland, starring Domhnall Gleeson, Oscar Isaac, and Alicia Vikander, a young programmer is selected to participate in a breakthrough experiment in artificial intelligence by evaluating the human qualities of a breakthrough female AI. Now, Aaron, I understand that you've seen this. Is there anything you'd like to offer now or hold off till reviews?
I'll hold off. You guys go ahead.
All right. Well, Scotty and Brian, are you at all interested in this new tale of humanity's search for AI and what happens when we get it? Everybody jump in there at once.
Yes, I'm on board. I totally need to see this movie. Every time I see a trailer or anything on this, it looks more and more intriguing than any other AI film I've seen in quite a while. And then obviously Aaron gave it high praise from South by Southwest. If I remember correctly, it was his favorite film he saw there. That enough makes me want to go check it out just to see what he saw. Hopefully he had the same.
I don't know if it's that enough, because just before the show, he's telling us how he heard it indoors somewhere else, and now he really wants to see it. That's what I heard.
I was actually legitimizing your endorsement.
I know. Yeah, I was just giving you. It's okay. Hugging it out.
Come on, Scott. You know he can't miss an opportunity to shit on you.
Mm-hmm. I know.
Says Justin McCumber.
Hey, shut up. Move on.
God.
Scotty, continue.
Fucking shit.
No, that's it. I was actually curious what Brian thought about it, because he's not a big sci-fi guy outside of Marvel Universe, so.
What? What on earth tells you that I'm not a sci-fi guy?
Well, I'm comparing you to Justin. Compared to Justin.
Well, I mean, there's not many people. Justin writes sci-fi novels. It's hard to reach that freaking
book. That's right? A good point.
So I personally love, just for the record, I mean, we've only been doing this 3.5, almost 4 years now. So mm-hmm. just so you know me a little bit better, I do love the sci-fi genre.
What? That's new.
I know. I didn't know that. Craziness.
How do you feel about Marvel? Just, do you like Marvel?
It's okay. I like what they're doing. I think they're doing some pretty good things. I think they got some great ideas, and I'm anxious to see where they go moving forward.
So what about this movie?
This movie, I am definitely intrigued with it. You've piqued my interest in this. You tend to, I guess, pull back on the reins a little bit as far as your excitement. So when you're really excited about something, I know you are really, really excited. And so you and I have similar interests. And it's not a matter of just, I mean, it's just one of those things to where, you know, I know your taste as well as you know mine. And so that's one of those things to where, I would take your, if you said, hey, watch this, I would take your word on it. Mm-hmm. And the little bit that I have heard about it has been very positive from different sources. So I'm extremely curious about this movie.
I am too. I like Oscar Isaac a lot as an actor, and Alex Garland, as a writer, he wrote Dread. He wrote 28 Days Later. He wrote Sunshine, mm-hmm. all films that I really thoroughly enjoyed. So I'm looking forward to seeing another movie that he's done. And this is his directorial debut, which mm-hmm. also adds to my interest as well. So all around, this is really high up on my list of must-sees. I will definitely be in theaters to check this one out.
Oscar Isaacs is one of those actors that you don't realize you've seen in a whole bunch of other films.
Very much.
Plays completely different roles. not just character, but visually. Like you're almost like won't even recognize him in other movies.
When I saw the movie, I looked him up immediately when it was over. Because I thought, I got to find this guy. I got to see something else. And I had seen like 8 movies he'd been in.
Yeah, Inside Llewyn Davis mm-hmm. and Sucker Punch are 2 of them that I know him from immediately.
He's in Star Wars, isn't he? And then
the upcoming, he's going to be an X-Wing pilot.
Yeah.
So yeah
so much for the fat middle-aged guys, being X-Wing pilots anymore, huh?
Porkins.
Yeah, well, apparently we all crashed.
Yeah.
Leaving room for the thin, fit youngins.
Fuck. So vain. They're so vain in the future or past.
They are.
Where is that? I'm not sure.
It was a long, long time ago.
I'm waiting for the internet meme of like, when did this become the standard for X-Wing pilots instead of this?
Well, why don't you make it? While Justin's wrapping up, why don't you make that?
I might have to.
Well, wait.
Yeah, you go ahead and do that. I'll go on.
Okay.
I think they got an app for that.
Next up, The Longest Ride. This one is directed by George Tillman Jr. and stars Scott Eastwood, yes, son of Clint Eastwood and Britt
Handsome.
Robinson.
Mm-hmm.
He is a good looking young man, but I kind of figured being the son of Clint Eastwood kind of made that sort of a given. If you like haggard, lined, old.
Who doesn't?
Dudes. Yeah, exactly. And Britt Robertson, who will also be coming up in Tomorrowland. Now, this movie is about the lives of a young couple intertwine with a much older man as she reflects back on a lost love while he's trapped in an automobile crash. This is yet another fucking Nicholas Sparks book turned into a movie. So I am sure the theaters will be chock-a-block with girls and their unwilling boyfriends and or husbands. You guys, Aaron, are you going to be in a theater to check out The Longest Ride?
Hell no. No. Uh-uh. This is, by the way, the
Here we go. Here's the Aaron I love, the Haterator.
Most unfortunate title I've ever heard in my life. I thought it was a porn when it first came out. Like, what? You've got these people looking longingly at each other. They're all sweaty. And he whips out his saddle, and then it's like, the longest ride. I'm like, I can't take it seriously from that point forward. Nicholas Sparks, fine. You had The Notebook. Everything else has been kind of eh. So I really, other than seeing Clint Eastwood's son act, I have no interest in this whatsoever. And it's not because I don't like love. I like it fine.
You love love.
I love love.
You live for love.
I just hate this love.
I wholeheartedly agree, actually. And sadly, I think this movie is marketed wrong because I haven't read the books, so I don't know. But to me, the interesting thing about this story, at least what I can gather from the trailer, isn't the primary two characters. It's the Alan Alda character telling his story about his long-lost love and that kind of thing that looks so much more interesting. And that seemed to be kind of put on the back burner in this trailer in lieu of this rodeo guy and this girl that he's trying to woo.
Rodeo guy.
Cowboy? What are they, sure. Cowboys?
Yeah, we can go.
Was it the electric horseman?
The electric horseman.
He might be the urban cowboy, though.
He could be.
Sorry.
I don't know. I think that this movie is better than the trailer gives it out to be, but I still don't have a whole lot of desire to just run out and check it out.
Isn't this the same plot as The Notebook, or am I wrong?
Well...
Aren't they all the same story?
I get yelled at for spoilers on the show. So I'm not going to even allude to a spoiler of The Notebook to compare it to this movie. So, but
look, the Notebook, the whole story in The Notebook is spelled out in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this, even though I have never watched The Notebook, I had, when my girlfriend at the time and my mother went to go see that movie together because I refused to go. I asked them, did this happen? Did this happen? Did this happen? Yes. Okay. And they, you know, they told me that.
No,
they told me
we don't know. We're on bated breath, man.
Yeah, it was. I mean, they told me, I mean, I explained the plot, you know, what happened. And they said, yes, that's what happened. I said, okay. All right. So I'm not crazy. I know what happened with that movie. So it's not exactly a spoiler for The Notebook. Plus it's been what, over 10 years? We're past the statute of limitations.
Yeah, I thought we were past the statute of limitations on Prison Break when it was spoiled for me.
Dude,
and then I got yelled at for spoiling it for
you. You were like
our
the biggest baby. I swear. Big as baby.
And you know why that listener hounds you about it?
Because you're
a sensitive bitch.
We should get him a t-shirt. Hashtag.
Hashtag sensitive bitch.
Sensitive bitch. Prison broke my heart.
I love you, Scott. I'm just teasing.
I know you do.
Aaron had it earlier. Scott, that was your turn. Justin, you're next. Just giving you a heads up, buddy.
All right. We all get our time in the chute.
Do you want to see Justin?
In the barrel.
Fuck no.
Okay.
I got no interest in a paint-by-numbers romance type shit. No interest.
See, I don't think this one is as paint-by-numbers as the trailer gives it out to be. I really... think there's an interesting story there, but they're trying to sell it to a younger audience. I can't speak from experience, but that's the impression I get from this, is that you're going to have a better story than what they're selling.
I would like you to find out and let us know.
Man, I guess it is time for me to bite a bullet for you guys, isn't it?
Yeah, I would say you owe us because we're not going to do it.
All right, folks. Well, of these two films, Ex Machina. And The Longest Ride, which one are you guys most likely to run out to a theater and check out? Scotty?
Definitely Ex Machina.
Brian?
I'm not even... Yes, that one.
Aaron, you've already seen one of them. Would you rather go back and see it again?
I would rather see that again, yes.
Well, there you go. Ex Machina gets a clean sweep.
Is that
getting
wide
release? Longest Ride.
Don't know yet. It's getting a lot of buzz, so there's a chance it'll still be limited, but it might get a wider release than planned as we get closer. Fingers crossed, man. It was really good. Let's go to box office, Brian.
All right, well, the surprise hit of the weekend was a little movie called Furious 7, which roared past the competition with a blistering $147 million, which is more than the first three movies' respective opening weekends combined. So instead of boring you with a ton of numbers, let's just say it broke a shit ton of records. Mm-hmm. And we're talking like Marvel cinematic records. So if you want to call it, coming in second place was Home with $27 million. This is their second weekend for a total of $95 million. Get Hard went flat with a $13 million three-day total to cross over the $57 million threshold on a $40 million budget, which means we just might get a sequel. So brace yourselves.
No, we will not. It's not going to happen.
I tell you, that movie Home picked the perfect weekend to release. I mean, between the weekend before for Year 7 and being spring break for a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
They really did well with that movie. I know, much to Justin's chagrin, but they did really well with the marketing on that.
Fuck that movie.
You still haven't seen it. You can't say
I don't need
fuck
to.
That movie until
just
you
hearing
see
his
it.
Fucking voice in that trailer. Ugh.
You can't do it.
I'm waving my arms and I do just not do care. I even said that wrong. But
if somebody saw one of your books and they said, fuck that book because they don't like the title, Would that bother you? Would you say that was unfair?
Yeah,
for
I like
something
the movie
as simple as a title
or the description. The description.
I'm going with an actor's performance, which is pivotal to the movie as a whole.
Right.
Not, or what not about just some random bit?
What about your book's cover?
My book cover is fucking rock.
But
people
but
don't
somebody
like
goes,
it.
What is this? What is this like?
I don't want those stupid people reading my shit. I don't want dumb people reading my stuff.
Yeah, you should definitely be picky and choosy.
That's right.
What else we got, Brian?
Well, Cinderella might want to trade in her glass slipper for an under-cheek revealing miniskirt if she wants to run with a Fast and Furious crew. While its four-week total is over $167 million, she's going to need to put some turbo in that pumpkin carriage to catch up, since Cindy only came in at about $10 million this weekend. Insurgent is barely in the race with a $10 million weekend also, and even though it is a three-week total of over $100 million, it's still yet to reach their budget of $110
million. Ouch. I really thought that would be a bigger hit. But
I did too, but it's not sticking. I don't know what it is, but it ain't hanging in there with the Hunger Games crowd.
What's this movie?
Okay, what's this movie? Each week we play ours or a listener suggests a clip from a movie. And if you think you know what the clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Next week I'll give you a proper host shout out. Last week's answer was Brian's pick, and it was Sneakers. Tommy Lynch and Craig Schermerhorn were the ones that got it correct, so thank you guys. This week, actually, Tommy Lynch suggested a clip. So it's not going to be, it was going to be my clip, but apparently he must have psychically known that and said, no, we want something of quality. And so he sent in a clip, so here's your clip. Remember, if you know what this clip is, email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. We'll give you a shout out next week. Here's your clip.
Sign says closed.
Yeah, we were looking to buy some gas.
We also wanted to get directions.
Yeah, we're looking for, what's it called?
Tillerman Road.
I've seen plenty come and go. Hell, I've been here since the war.
Which war?
You know damn well which war.
Would that have been with the blue and some in gray?
You sassing me, boy.
You were rude to my friend.
That whore.
What'd you say?
I think we got enough gas.
You got enough to get you there. Getting back. That's your concern.
Dun, dun, dun. Now let's go to reviews. Review any new releases. We've got two this week. One's Ex Machina. And that's Ex... Justin, how do you say this correctly?
Machina.
Machina.
Ex Machete.
Ex Machina. I saw this at South by Southwest, so I'll tell you briefly what it is. It's writer-director Alex Garland's film about Caleb. And I know Justin already explained it, but here's my quick review. He's a young programmer selected by his company to participate in a very unique experiment by his company's reclusive CEO, Nathan, who's Oscar Isaac, as we were talking about earlier. The experiment requires Caleb to interact with a female robot named Ava and test her AI. See, Ava is programmed to feel. to think, to grow, just like any rational human would. So the test for Caleb becomes, within his allotted week at this test facility, can a robot convince him that she is, for lack of a better word, real? It's kind of like a it's kind of a mesh with her and very, you know, AI. I mean, really. But where the story goes would lead directly into spoiler territory. It's definitely a movie that you're going to want to experience yourself. I'm not going to ruin that for you. What I will say is that it is the most insightful and thought-provoking film I've seen in a long time. Alex Garland has become the director to watch for me. Oscar Isaac, like I said earlier, he's just become this actor that I have to see. And Alicia Vikander, she creates this like character in Ava that I didn't think was honestly possible at the beginning of the film. And where her story goes specifically is it's just a hell of a journey. So walk into the movie with the idea that you're about to see a science fiction film that is not too far away from being science fact at this point. But walk out of the film knowing you may think differently about the human condition. Hell, you might even begin to side with the AI before everything is said and done. Wherever you end up, I can almost promise you that you'll immediately want to dissect it with your friends as soon as you leave the theater. It's that good. So early into 2015, this is already one of my all-time favorite sci-fi films. I've had over a month to digest it, or almost a month to digest it, and it's still there, and easily my favorite film since 12 Years a Slave. So to me, it was almost perfect. I cannot recommend it enough. If $10 is the full price of admission, it's worth $9.50.
One quick question. Do you feel like it was trying to push any one agenda or to show favoritism towards either the humans or the technology, or was it kind of evenly balanced?
No, I thought it was very evenly balanced. But I will say when it ends, I think you will have picked a side.
Right, but not one that the film was like intentionally, you could feel it steering you toward.
Mm-mm. Nope.
Okay.
I don't think so. I think it leaves it pretty much up to you. I've talked to several people after the movie, and we saw the film different ways.
Well, that was one of my very few hesitations with Chappie, is that it kind of felt like it was already telling me what I needed to think before I even went in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Chappie had the cute voice, and so it was a good guy. Hugh Jackman had, of course, a terrible mullet, so he's obviously the bad guy. and I like a movie where you get to, where it's kind of neutral, and you just have to sort it out for yourself. So that's good. I like to hear that.
Well, the way they did it, the way Garland does it, is very smooth, because he introduces you to the scenario through Caleb. And then you slowly start to understand Ava's side of it. And then so you kind of you connect in the middle to both of their perspectives. And it's very interesting how it's done. And I really love how it played out.
Cool.
Now, Furious 7, we are going to do a spoiler cast after the show, which means we get to talk about all the crazy frickin' fun we had with this movie. If we did, maybe we hated it. Who knows? But we're going to do a quick spoiler-free review for those of you that may be on the fence on if whether or not you want to see it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to read the basic plot summary, and then each one of us is going to get two paragraphs to say quickly what we thought, spoiler-free, and our scores, to give those of you that haven't seen it the opportunity to get an idea of what we thought.
You guys ready? Two paragraphs.
No, two sentences.
You jump from sentences to paragraphs.
Holy crap. Two sentences. Two sentences. Justin McCumber. Two sentences. And Scott, actually. Scott, more so than him. Okay, here's the plot. This time our heroes, Dom and Brian, are being targeted by the elusive badass brother of Fast Six baddie, Deckard Shaw. He's played by Jason Statham. In order to get the jump on Shaw, the gang agree to assist a covert government organization led by Mr. Nobody, that fantastic head of hair himself, Kurt Russell. They snatch up a hacker who has invented the most advanced and dangerous tracking software known to man, called God's Eye. I cannot even say this with a straight face. Brian, what's your review, your quick review?
It kind of stepped away from the Furious, what we think of these movies. And it basically is Mission Impossible. That's kind of what I thought of about the whole time. This is basically Mission Impossible with a few more cars and stuff. It is a totally ridiculous, yet wonderfully fun plot. Well, story, movie, because there's really not much of a plot or story in there. And it is the perfect send-off to Paul Walker. $10, I'd give it an 8 because I did cry. So it drew out some emotion.
I know I'm labeled as the guy that uses the word fun to describe too many movies, but it's hard not to use that word for this one because Furious 7 is such a thrill ride from start to finish with a beautiful and perfect finish that begs to be seen on the big screen, even though it's something I personally wouldn't watch multiple times, but still I highly recommend it. If $10 was the full price of admission, I would give it $7.
Justin?
I think that the addition of Kurt Russell is fantastic. When he appeared on screen and just started acting, I instantly wanted to see this character return and be the instigator for whatever further adventures these characters have. I will say on the downside, I didn't find it as fun as I had previous Fast and Furious movies, but the level of spectacle they were able to generate was amazing. So $1 out of $10, I'd give it an easy $8.50.
This might be the most idiotic plot I've ever heard in my entire life.
Yep.
But still, I found Furious 7 to be ridiculous, insane, intense, fist pumping, eye rolling, exciting, ultimately heartbreaking. I would give it $8. This is what I want to spend 2 hours at the movies.
I cried.
I did at the end, just
tears fell.
Okay, well, we'll get to that when we get to the spoiler part. We don't want to talk about that now. Let's go. I'm just happy you have a heart. Let's go to Blu-ray and video on demand, Scott.
All right, we got a few releases for disc this week on Blu-ray and DVD. These are releases for April 14th. The first is The Babadook. This is a film that Aaron and I actually got a chance to check out a little pre-screening. But Aaron also was able to conduct an interview with the director, and that interview is available on the site if you'd like to check it out. I highly recommend it.
Jeez, the story is finally coming out on DVD? Mm-hmm. I feel like this movie has been out for like 2 years or something. We've been talking about it for so long.
It's that good, man.
No, I didn't like it as much as you did.
That's probably because I liked it. Go ahead.
I wanted that kid to die so bad. And his dumb mother.
Well, the story is about a single mother who's plagued by the violent death of her husband and battles with her son's fear of a monster lurking in the house, but soon discovers a sinister presence all around her. Aaron and I did both review it on episode 163. Aaron gave it an $8, and I did as well.
Because it was damn good. That's why.
I was surprised at how much I liked it. It was a lot of fun. The Woman in Black 2. 40 years after the first haunting at Eel Marsh House, a group of children evacuated from World War II London arrive, awakening the house's darkest inhabitant. This is a sequel to the movie that originally starred the kid from Harry Potter, who's Daniel Radcliffe. Thank you. Next up is Big Eyes. This is a drama about the awakening of the painter Margaret Keane, who's played by Amy Adams, her phenomenal success in the 1950s, and the subsequent legal difficulties she had with her husband, played by Christoph Waltz, who claimed credit for her works in the 1960s.
That son of a bitch.
I'm actually really looking forward to checking that one out because I love Christoph Waltz first off, but this story kind of sounds interesting. Mm-hmm. Mad to the Stars, a tour into the heart of a Hollywood family chasing celebrity, one another, and the relentless ghosts of their past. This is directed by David Cronenberg and stars Julianne Moore, John Cusack, and Robert Pattinson. Last one on disc is The Man with the Iron Fists 2. When a stranger, Thaddeus, is found badly wounded near the village, miner Lee Kung and his wife, Ah Ni, offer him refuge. As he heals, he becomes entrenched in a conflict that pits the townsfolk against the evil master Ho, his nefarious beetle clan, and the terrifying Lord Pai. Now, although he's not in this one, the RZA did help to write this one, so I'm pretty sure Aaron will be checking it out.
Thank God.
Yes.
We don't want the story to vary, you know.
Seriously, I mean, this is like Machete. Nobody saw the goddamn movie. Why does it need a sequel? I don't understand. That's such a vanity thing. I don't get it.
I'm not sure. We do have one more as well. This isn't disc, but it is on video on demand. It's Misery Loves Company. I'm so used to saying that phrase. Misery Loves Comedy. Over 50 very famous American and Canadian funny people, filmmakers, writers, actors, and comedians share life and professional journeys and insights in an effort to shed light on the thesis, do you have to be miserable to be funny? I think that one sounds really interesting, especially considering the recent death of Robin Williams and how it was a cathartic thing for him to be funny. So I'm looking forward to that one.
Aaron, maybe you need more misery in your life because you're not that funny.
That's what you keep telling me, and yet other people tell me different. I don't know what that means. It sounds
they're so kind.
Yes.
That's it's probably because they like you.
Yeah.
Ooh, really?
Mm-hmm. A lot of people. How many people like you, Justin? You want to take a tally real quick? You got enough fingers?
All right, with that, we usually move on to the trivia or whole game of the week, but in lieu of shortness of time, we're going to skip it this week so we can go right to our From the Outside In topic, and that's where we're going to pass it off to Aaron.
Thanks, Scott. Since we will be talking about Furious 7, a conversation that has come up a lot on social media and elsewhere is this. Should prominent actors be replaced in established films and TV shows once they leave for whatever reason? Sometimes an actor passes away. Sometimes they leave due to financial issues. Sometimes they get fired because their egos are writing checks their talent can't cash. And sometimes they just quit. Like, they think they're just too big for whatever they're doing. So when this happens, this is our conversation. Should we replace them, or should we acknowledge what the audience already knows and write them out?
You know, it really, for me, a lot of it depends on why they're gone. If the actor dies, I would prefer they just write the character off or find a way to send that character, you know, off screen and just leave it at that, because everybody who watches it knows why they're not there anymore. The only difference being is that if it's, say, like when Richard Harris died, and while they were filming the Harry Potter movies, you can't just suddenly have Dumbledore disappear and never return. He's a character in the books. He's an important character. So you have to recast that, which is why Michael Gambon came on and finished out the franchise. But if someone is just getting too big for their britches and wants more money, or if they were difficult to work with, like supposedly Terrence Howard was in the Iron Man movie. Yeah, that's why they had Don Cheadle come in to reprise the role of Rhodes. They felt like he wasn't as good as Terrence Howard thought he was, and he was asking for too much money. And so in that instance, yeah, replace him with a different actor. We'll all move forward. But if the actor dies, I think it's usually best to just let that character go and not replace them with someone else, because it's just bad form, I think, unless there's extenuating circumstances as to why you would have to.
Why did they – Terrence Howard, was he demanding more money? Because I thought they wanted to drop his salary or something.
They wanted him to, and he refused to. So they said, all right, well, goodbye, and asked Don Cheadle to do it. And so he's taken up the role, and – he played the character in Iron Man 2, and then in what was it? Was he in 3?
Yeah, he was in 3.
Yep.
Yeah. And I'm sure he'll be in the next Avengers movie. So.
But he wasn't nearly as good as Terrence Howard. I'm still mad about that one.
I prefer Terrence Howard as well.
I did too.
I'm very much the same. I really just, you know, it really varies. It really depends. You know, you've got like Shannon Doherty, who I was just. Once she left, because she left like 2 shows, 90210 and Charmed, and just left them both hanging. At that point, when you do that, I think they should just kill the character off, because you're kind of a jackass. And you're just doing it for selfish reasons. You're doing it for vanity. You're doing it for money, whatever it is. And I guess I always look at it from there's like 200 people that are depending on that work, and you're just holding them up or leaving because you're, you know, like Terrence Howard, a stalemate. Trying to get more money. David Caruso, NYPD Blue, that's another example. Those kind of issues, I really just kill them off. I want no opportunity for that character to ever come back. When you've got issues like Paul Walker, that's when you got to write them out, and you got to do it respectfully. If someone dies, I just don't think, unless it's pivotal like Dumbledore was, like you were talking about Dumbledore, I really don't think you should continue with that character just out of respect. Am I wrong in thinking that, or is that just I'm being too stuck on the actor and not the role?
Totally. You're absolutely right. To me, it's a case-by-case basis. You can't just say this is the way it should be for, you know, kind of with a, like an umbrella statement. You know, it's one of those things to where, like Charlie Sheen, you know, I mean, he was not coming back to that show once he was gone. So they killed him off on two and a half men.
And
two men and a
two men and a way too long TV show.
Two men and a one cup.
The funny thing about that, the funny thing about that is though that they wrote him out of the show technically, but they basically just kept it going. They made the character richer and dumber, but it's basically the same character, just like a womanizing guy. Am I wrong?
No, I really watched one episode, I think, when Ashton Kutcher hopped in. So I honestly don't know, and I didn't think it was funny. I didn't think the show was funny to begin with, so
I didn't either.
Who cares?
I gotta ask you, Aaron. You were talking about like if an actor just gets upset and thinks they're not getting enough money and just the right amount, does that really stick it to them? If you're writing their character out, do they really care at that point? I mean,
Yes, I think so. Like, you know, sometimes an actor does that and then they want to come back. And for me personally, I say kill them off because you don't deserve the opportunity to come back. You know, like Shelley Long left Cheers, right? And this is way before a lot of people's time, but the show Cheers was one of the most popular comedies in the 80s. She left like midway through the run because she wanted to go be a rich movie star, which is fine. You know, it happens. But they left the door open so that they ended up bringing her back for the finale. Me personally, I say kill her off. She left because, you know, for her own selfish reasons, kind of put the show into, the possibility that it could flop without her, because her relationship with Sam on that show was extremely pivotal to the success. So really, you know, they got lucky by casting Kirstie Alley, but it could have went the other way. And for me, when you sign onto a TV show, you're acknowledging the commitment could be 5, 7, 8, 9 years of playing the same role. And I've always found that kind of irritating when people will just abandon the show for their own. I mean, I realize you got a career, but you signed on to the show knowing that there's a possibility of that.
What if it's a case, though, like, say, with Lisa Robin Kelly, who played, Lori in that 70s show.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she was the older sister to the main character. She had a drinking problem, which was why she left the show for one season, and then she came back in its fifth season, did a few episodes, and then had to leave the show again, and then someone came in to take over her role to continue playing the character of Lori. When it's an instance of someone having a substance abuse issue, do you still hold the door open for them to come back once they've recovered, or do you consider that your bad choices have culminated in this, therefore you shouldn't get to come back?
I would be more forgiving for that, because that's just like a lot of psychological issues, that's a problem that could stem from a million factors. It's not just vanity, not just greed. That's a legitimate problem. I wouldn't put that in the same boat. I do think get a handle on your problem. Charlie Sheen should have too. But if you just totally abandon them because you want to go make a big movie career and that fails, I don't think you should be able to come back. In fact, I think they should invite you onto the set just to tell you you can't come back. I firmly believe that. Like Katherine Heigl, I mean, she was kind of a nightmare on Grey's Anatomy, and she left. And I'm glad. I mean, Shonda Rhimes, is that her name?
Yeah.
And she said very adamantly, she will never come back here. So no matter what, I don't know if her character's dead or what happened to her character, but no matter what, she's not coming back to the show. And that's because she was a problem.
If a character gets, if an actor gets replaced, do you think that they should search out someone who looks a lot like them and not like what they did with Game of Thrones, with that one character who in one season is played by this, you know, long blonde haired Fabio looking dude, and then the next season replaced with a guy who's got shorter brunette hair? I mean, they could not look any more dissimilar, yet they're both playing the same character. And it took me like an episode or two before I realized, oh, okay, that's who he's playing.
Well, especially when you're having a show that is known for being complex with its characters. There's so many characters, and trying to remember the names and the different realms that you're in, you know.
Right.
Stop messing with my head. I haven't read the books.
So when a new face pops up, you're like, oh, okay, this is a new person. But right. It wasn't. It was an old, you know, a character from the previous season, just with a different actor.
I do like the ones where they kind of have fun with it, though, too. If you guys remember, obviously you guys have seen Roseanne. The character Becky was played by two, if not three, different actresses. Is it just two?
Yep. And ultimately, it was played by the one girl that went to Scrubs, I think, right?
Sarah Chalk.
Yep.
And didn't they actually, like, make a joke about it and, like, break the fourth wall at some point in one episode and make reference to it? And that's funny when you do that to me. If you have some comedy at the
Iron Man 2 did that too, where Don Cheadle showed up and what did he say? I'm here. Deal with it.
Yep.
Now, Brian, you were mentioning Bewitched off the air.
Yeah, you had Dick York, you had Dick Sargent, and Dick York basically had I believe it was a back injury, and he was laid up pretty bad, and he even discussed his, one of the producers or directors asked him, what do you want to do? And he said, hey, look, if it's all right with you, I'll step down. And, let's keep the show rolling, but I really can't keep this up. And so, Dick Sargent filled in for like the next 5 years or something like that. So he just stepped in and, I'm sure there was a little bit of change, but after a while he just got assimilated, and that was the, that was the guy at the time. So that was the Darren Stevens. So
what did you guys think about, like, when Harrison Ford took over for Alec Baldwin? Cause in, the Jack Ryan movies, cause that for me was
around.
No,
Harrison Ford took over for Alec Baldwin.
Alec Baldwin was in the very first one. What's the first one? October.
Oh, you're right. Hunt for October was first.
I didn't think twice about it. I didn't think twice about it. To me, it was not an issue.
Because for me, I thought it was a huge change, an actor and type of performance. Like, Harrison Ford played Jack Ryan very much like Harrison Ford plays Harrison Ford, and I thought Alec Baldwin actually had a character. And this is the only time I'll ever say anything negative about Harrison Ford in my lifetime. But as far as that role goes, that was a daunting change for me because I thought Alec Baldwin was fantastic. And I thought,
as the analyst, like stuck in a weird situation.
He just felt like a real character, where Harrison Ford just seemed like every Harrison Ford character we've seen in every movie he's done.
Well, and he's always played action type roles. So when he's suddenly Jack Ryan, you as an audience member kind of expect that this is going to be a more active Jack Ryan. Whereas really in the books, Jack Ryan was very much, as Scott Egan said, he was an analyst. He wasn't one of those guys who did all the running and gunning. But because they cast Harrison Ford, I think they kind of had to make it a little more actiony. And then Tom Clancy did make the character a bit more of a shooter. But still, I've always felt like the movies made him a little tougher than he should have been, and I liked when Alec Baldwin played him.
Do you guys think it's easier on TV versus film? Like, it's easier to recast a film character than it is a TV character?
I might say yes, only because you get more doses of that new person, and so it's easier to get used to it. Whereas with a movie, it's just one every couple of years, so. When I watched Iron Man 2, I really felt Terrence Howard's absence every time I saw Don Cheadle. Mm-hmm. But if it was once a week for 20 weeks, I'd probably get over it pretty quick.
What if you're binge watching the show, though? You're not watching it every week.
If they do it in the middle of the season, that's going to be tough.
Mm-hmm.
Right in the middle of the season.
Episode 11 of a 13-episode series. Yeah, we're going to change it up a little bit.
Well, Game of Thrones. I mean, when they did, how was that guy's name? That was the weird looking guy. And then the next season, he's Dario. Yeah,
Dario Naharis.
Yeah, he goes from being this guy that looks like he's on the cover of a romance
Harlequin
novel.
Exactly.
To the next season, he looks like the lumberjack from, local tree farm.
Brawny man.
Well, he looks like every other bearded guy in the movie, in the show.
Yeah, that was a big change. Big change.
Meanwhile, the Mountain has so far been played by three different guys. Who knew?
I had no idea.
Who kind of realized? Most of the time, he's just got a helmet on.
When you got a mountain of a man, they all look the same. Like, yeah, he could hurt me. That's all I remember. Yeah. I think it's more daunting on a TV series, me personally. I think because you've got the amount of episodes, you've got the frequency. Most movies, you're going to get 2 years, maybe 3 years in between. And I think you're not going to get that on a TV show, so it's a much quicker issue. Dumbledore was a big change for me. I really had a hard time with the new Dumbledore. I didn't think he was nearly as good.
Yeah, he just didn't have that fatherly kind of feel that Richard Harris did.
He felt kind of like he's acting, where Richard Harris felt like this is a guy that would lead somebody.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that was a big...
He had that wizardy twinkle that Gambon just never could manage.
When I was researching this, I was looking up specifically for Jeffrey Wright's character. I couldn't remember the name of it from the Bond movies, right? But Felix Leiter. You remember him? Jeffrey Wright, Casino Royale, and... Is he in Skyfall or just Quantum of Solace? I can't remember. Jeffrey Wright, the black guy that...
Yeah, he was a CIA analyst. Yes. Oh.
He's been in 9 Bond movies, and he's been played by 7 different actors.
Huh.
And I had no idea until
and
I
yet,
looked that up.
And yet, none of us still remember his name.
No, I knew his name was Felix, and I knew he was played by different guys. I didn't know it was that many guys. But it was, that just goes to show that in movies, you can shake it up a little bit more.
You can shake it off? Shake it off? Maybe you should wear like a name badge.
Yep. Shake it like a Polaroid. Just
says, I am Felix this movie. You know, and that would be, oh, okay, that's who.
I am Felix this movie. My name is Felix.
Hey. Yes.
One of the ones that came to mind also was Rachel Dawes from Dark Knight.
Oh, yeah, with Katie Holmes and Maggie Gorgeous Gyllenhaal.
God. Did you guys think that was the right call? Because I didn't have a problem with Katie Holmes.
I didn't either.
Katie Holmes as an actress is fine, and she's certainly very easy on the eyes. But, you know, and I don't mean this to be negative towards her, but I never really bought her as this investigative person, you know, this really driven, kind of tough woman. Maggie Gyllenhaal's character, when she played it, I definitely got that feeling. Like, this is a very strong woman.
Did you see Thank You for Smoking?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. She was pretty investigative in that one.
That's a different film, though. I'm talking in a Batman movie. She just kind of, she seemed like they cast her to be a love interest, not to be this DA kind of tough lawyer person.
Right.
I never had a problem with, I actually had more of a problem with the ugly Gyllenhaal, the one that looks like Jake Gyllenhaal, than I did with Katie Holmes. I thought Katie Holmes was fine. I mean, I didn't think she was great, but I never had a problem with her. I'm still bothered by that switch because I didn't feel like there was enough of a problem to make it make sense to me, I guess.
Well, but do we know all the background stuff that went into it? Who knows?
She was probably cursing Scientology and somebody got pissed and they pulled her.
Right. But Maggie, I could sit there and watch her just read the phone book.
As long as it was in front of her face, that'd be fine.
You're so mean.
God. And here's the one that, for me personally, is probably my biggest casting reshuffle, is when Jodie Foster bailed out of Hannibal, and they recast Clarice Starling as
Julianne Moore.
She never even came within the same zip code as Jodie Foster for me. So I never even accepted her as Clarice Starling throughout that entire movie.
Well, it didn't help that movie was kind of awful anyway.
Yeah, it didn't help. I mean, it wasn't, I thought it was okay, but definitely wasn't, I wouldn't say good.
Not what we in the biz call good.
Exactly. Not what we in the biz call quality. Any other ones? How about when we've talked about people leaving, we've talked about recasting the role for differences. What about when they outright die? Like Paul Walker. I mean, for that series, should they... we'll talk more specifically to him, but when at the spoiler cast portion, but when someone dies, should they, out of respect, let it be?
Let it be. Let it be. Yeah, like I said when we started this topic, if they die and it's just a character that can go off, don't replace them. But if it's a part of a series and you have to have that character, I don't mind if that character is played by someone else.
Well, the one that comes to mind for me isn't like one of the acclaimed worst movies of all time, Plan 9 from Outer Space.
Mm-hmm.
Isn't that the one where the guy died halfway through filming and they just replaced him with another guy that just wore like a cloak over his face for the rest of the movie?
Yeah, but that's not why that movie sucked.
No, I know, but I mean, you know, is that one that, well, we just shouldn't have made this crappy movie or, you know?
Well, that one, I think they were trying to finish the same movie.
Right.
That's different. They were just trying to get it done. Mm-hmm. I can see recasting or figuring a way out for that because you've already got money invested. But if you continue, do you continue make that role stay alive if it's not, like Justin said, pivotal? Do you just let it go?
Well, it depends on how far into the shooting you are. I mean, with the Crow, Brandon Lee died, but basically they kind of filled in.
What? And, spoiler alert.
Yeah. You know, whatever. 25 years later. Hey, my bad. he dies pretty late. Luckily, pretty late into the shooting, and they had to fill in a few scenes with, CGI and stuff. And at the time, it was pretty, advanced CGI methods. And so, but then,
with advanced CGI methods, like they showed him walking away from the camera and they showed the back of his head.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what freaking scenes were CGI were actually him and not. I just know there were filler scenes with maybe him running or whatever. But anyway, they added those few scenes, whichever ones they were, with somebody else who was, not Brandon Lee. And but then the subsequent movies were filmed with somebody else, and whatever. I mean, they weren't exactly successful. So yeah, I mean, is that the actor or is that the story? Is that the director? Whatever the case is, but
All right. Well, what did our listeners say?
Well, Scott Kelgaro says, I think actors and films can be interchangeable with a few exceptions. Film arcs can span so many years that it's often impossible to keep the same actor in a role. The rapid pace of TV, however, makes replacing actors difficult. For example, I think we would all be confused as hell and very pissed off if next season someone other than Norman Reedus was playing Daryl on The Walking Dead. When actors want to leave a television series, you almost have to write them out.
It's a good point.
X-Files with Duchovny. Oh, they didn't get someone else to play Mulder. They just wrote the character out for a while.
Just think of how the fans would have revolted for that. If they would have recast him.
There would have been wars.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Peterson says it really all depends on the character and where you are in production. If they're minor characters, then, and they've only been around for a short while, he doesn't really remind them recasting it, but most of the time that's not the case. And then he'd prefer to write them off as having a new actor coming in to replace the someone familiar, he prefers then to write them off as having a new actor coming in to replace someone familiar can be distracting. So
Scott,
Robert Noble says, I think it could work for TV just as well as film. The soaps used to do it all the time. It's jarring at first, but can be very successful. In the case of The Walking Dead, it probably makes more sense to write them off being the apocalypse and all.
Hmm. Did Robert Noble just out himself as a soap opera watcher?
I think so.
D.H. Haney says, written out and the character redistributed creatively seems best in most cases because oftentimes it's just too disconcerting to see a new face fill the shoes if it's been a long time character the audience has grown with. Replaced can work if the part is new to viewers, but it takes a bit to accept the change. I'm thinking Dario Naharis, Dario?
Which is it? Macarena.
Sure.
Macarena from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. I mean, everybody did double takes when he switched faces, but I'm not sure if they recast Jon Snow that feel as smooth.
Brian?
Amy Hutchinson kind of echoes what Steve Peterson says. But she says, in the instance of Fast and the Furious, they were far enough along in the series. It's easy enough to write out Paul Walker. In a show like Criminal Minds, Mandy Patinkin quit because he didn't like the content of the show. Apparently he wasn't aware when it began that it would be such a dark subject matter. Of course, how do you, she's confused on how he couldn't figure that out.
That's a good point.
So they just basically wrote him out. His character was cool, but not important enough to be replaced by another actor. And as in regards to Harry Potter, there were only two movies with Dumbledore, you know, by the time Richard Harris died, you know, it was such a hit. They were going to be making more movies and everything. So it only made sense. You had to recast Dumbledore. So.
And lastly, Michael Pippett says, it depends on the show. For serious prestige shows, then I would say write them out. But for soaps or long-running series, then I don't think it matters so much.
Yeah, there's a lot of people watching soap operas.
Sorry.
Maybe we're not cool. We should be watching soap operas more. I don't know. Thanks, guys. Well, that was an interesting topic. Now let's go to emails. Remember to like us on Facebook. We do have a Hollywood Outsider Facebook group for movie and TV fans, not just for fans of the show. It's for anybody who likes to talk about that. Just hop on over. The link is always in the show notes. Review us on iTunes. We will read your review on the show. Justin, you got the first email.
All right, this one's from Linton Bowers. He says, hey, hoes, thanks again for what you guys do. Much appreciated. Last week, the question came up, is there such a thing as too much Star Wars? It's an easy answer to... It's an easy one to answer. Is there such a thing as too much air? Is there such a thing as too much water when you're in the desert and half dehydrated? Or is there such a thing as too much toilet paper when your ex-girlfriend spiked your drink with Mega Ass Blast 3000 laxative?
Fuck?
The answer must be immortal because there can only be one. Fuck no. While I'm at it, I think there's one more thing that needs saying. You can never talk too much about comic book movie adaptations. So let's stop listening to all the people that are just wrong. Keep on doing what you do, hoes. Linton Bowers.
Brian?
I agree, Linton.
Mm-hmm. You would.
This is from Lori C. She says, dear gentlemen, I stumbled on your podcast just a couple of days ago while searching for articles about The Walking Dead. After listening to your The Walking Dead Season 5 Sportacast, episode 183, The Walking Dead Season 4 recap, and episode 160. Good Lord, the girl's been busy.
She went from 183 to 167. Look at that.
And episode 167, I have become a fan. Your discussions are interesting, detail-oriented. Everyone has a chance to speak, yet the dialogue is kept fun and funny. I am eager to go through your archives, and I wanted to thank you all for the hard work. Cheers, Lori C. So you know, Lori, the episode 100 is a pretty popular episode, just saying. And please don't hold anything against me.
Scott?
We also got one from our friend Tommy in Scotland. He says, just listening to and enjoying The Walking Dead recap, and I totally agree about the poor writing for Sasha and Gabriel.
Mm-hmm.
They're so flimsy as characters, they're annoying and jar with the rest of the mostly excellent writing for the other characters. All the best from sunny Scotland. Cheers, Tommy. And we also got one from a friend of ours from Great Britain. His name is Valence. Forgive me if I'm mispronouncing that. But Valence says, considering that us Brits make up less than 1% of the world's population, it's a bit odd that every other megalomaniac or otherwise cold-hearted bastard villain in American movies is British. More precisely, English. Yes, there really is a difference. I've often wondered, as I chomp on my overpriced stale popcorn, what the fuck is this about? Am I imagining this? Does this attitude really stem from the mild post-Boston Tea Party hatred? Or is it a grudging respect for the steely determination of your once colonial masters? This situation is relatively recent, no? 15 years ago, I don't remember seeing so many UK villains in American cinema. Considering that here in the UK, we consider ourselves relatively friendly, it's a bit of a mystery over here, but I guess it must be an American perception thing. And yes, he said thang, not thing. Please, please explain. P.S. You usually end the show by saying buy popcorn. Over here, popcorn is around $9 a tub, and that's not a giant USA-sized box. I'm not sorry to say that I can't and won't afford that, so I usually take in a pack of munchies from my local supermarket. But they do sell liquor in cinemas here, so I buy that sometimes instead.
That works.
So how cheap is or are sweets and treats in cinemas over there? Peace, Valence.
First, I mean, shit, British villains have been there forever, right?
Yeah,
Recently, they've had Jaguars come out with a couple of different commercials where they really kind of showcase this. With it's got Ben Kingsley, Tom Hiddleston, and Mark Strong as they talk about being villains and you know, all this kind of stuff.
Why the English make such good villains.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So what, look up that video. I'm sure it's on YouTube somewhere. Look that up. That tells you why.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, old Hollywood is full of movies where the English are playing bad guys. Though usually that's because the English are playing anyone that's not American. And so usually those are the bad guys, especially in movies made here in America. But fuck, look at Star Wars. I mean, the Empire was basically the English.
As it should be. What? What?
How did the Brits build the Death Star? They're all British in the Death Star. All the guys they're all British.
Are you saying the Brits aren't good engineers?
I think it's what Scott's saying.
Are you saying the Germans are better engineers than the Brits?
No, I'm saying like how all the.
So you're saying the Germans should have beat the Brits in World War II?
I don't even know what either one of you are saying at this point, but it's delightful.
The Germans didn't beat them they didn't lose because of their engineering.
They lost because of the swastikas. It's a bad design. Pick a better emblem.
But he is right, though. Don't call a Welshman English. They will probably kill you.
I don't.
They're British, but they're not English.
Can you tell the difference?
But they're all really? UK.
I can't. They all sound the same to me. I don't know. I got one email. It's real fun. It's a hate mail, kind of. It's about one of the reviews that I wrote that they use in the trailer, An Act of War. And Geoff was not a fan of my review, apparently. He went and saw the movie. He disagreed. So here's what he said. Aaron, is it true that you actually endorsed The Projectionist, a.k.a. An Act of War? Well, yes, I am. And Brian did, too, because he saw it with me. But that's beside the point. Let me finish.
All right.
It states this fact in the movie's trailer, so it must be true. In any event, if you did endorse this over-the-top, pretentious piece of Taxi Driver wannabe dross, then you have no business discussing film or digital muck with anyone who has the acumen, experience, and true credentials to discuss the film seriously. Because you, my friend, don't have a clue and should really find other work. Please, for the sake of art, please spare intelligent film buffs with what respect you have left and leave this world of film alone. And I quote, you do not get it. What were you going to say, Brian?
Okay, one, this is the whole reason we've done this podcast for so long is because we're normal people who do reviews. You know, we are normal people that are not pretentious movie snob a-holes who talk down to people because they don't get the finer qualities of some art house cinema versus something like The Avengers. Second, we were given the opportunity to screen this movie, and both you and I have. Mm-hmm. We're so moved by it that we contributed to their Kickstarter campaign. Mm-hmm. We paid them. They didn't pay us. So.
And we invited them on the show for an interview as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. They were great. And, I still totally support this movie. I think it is a fantastic movie. It is a very heavy movie. Is it inspired by other stuff? Absolutely, but you can say that about any other movie that's being put out right now. So that argument is null and void. I don't give a shit. I like this movie. I own this movie. I've contributed. I can, you know, proudly say I've contributed to the release of this movie, and I will continue to promote this movie. So, kiss my ass.
That's An Act of War now. They retitled it. So, I do not subscribe to the theory that a film critic's job is to find everything wrong with a movie that you don't like. It's his job to evaluate the movie based on what the movie's trying to do and then tell you what works or what doesn't work. If you want to destroy a movie, because that's what this guy obviously wants to do, that's up to you. If you have like personal politics or you just didn't like it, and you don't understand how somebody else could, that's your problem. That's not mine. If I like a movie, I'm going to tell people that are listening, and I'm going to write reviews that tell people that I like it. If you don't like it, I really don't care. I really don't. I mean, I want people to like the same movies I do, and I'm hoping if you listen to this, you have at least one of four voices you could find that likes this, whatever it is that you like. And hopefully one of those four will guide you to what you want to see and keep you away from other stuff you don't want to see. That's really the intent. And we're not interested in being like snobby film critics, like Brian said. Go find a snobby podcast for that. There are plenty of them. There are hundreds of them. Tons of them. We like movies like Taxi Driver, Godfather, Nightcrawler, Birdman, just as much as we like Fast and the Furious and Transformers. So,
amen.
Yep.
Rock on, bro.
That makes us unartistic. I don't think we agree on what the definition of art is.
And stop listening to the show.
Mm-hmm. Well, you can still download it. We're cool with that.
Just don't listen.
Yeah, just don't listen. And next time you get to write a shitty email, feel free to call in. I would love to debate your shitty email in person. All right, stay through the credits for outtakes. Go to The Hollywood Outsider. Oh, actually, I'm sorry.
We're not having outtakes.
We're not having outtakes. Thank you, Scott. We're going to have a Fast and Furious spoiler cast, which is coming up next, so I'll just be quick. TheHollywoodOutsider.com, Facebook.com. Damn it. Email us feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. Listen and subscribe for free on iTunes. Listen on your Stitcher radio app through your RSS feed. Let's just get right into it. Fast and the Furious. So the story, to this point forward, it's all spoilers. If you haven't seen Furious 7, I would walk away. I would be done because we're on to it. Does the story even matter anymore, Scott? Does it really matter?
No, I mean, this story in this movie seriously feels like they went out and said, okay, here's the action scenes that we want to film. This is what we want to do. Figure out a story that makes that work. like seriously, I feel like we didn't even get to the actual point, like the main plot point of this movie, until the final third of the movie.
What was the plot point? There was a plot point?
I would agree with you, Scott, if they hadn't set this up actually at the end of the previous movie. So I think that they've had this idea of having this character that Jason Statham plays coming in to really fuck shit up for a while.
The main story was, like you said, alluded to at the end of the previous movie, and then they just kind of interspersed him throughout like this other stuff that just didn't really matter except as a mild way to get them to that final third of the story. But by the time we got there, I was so confused with the different stories that were going on. We had, Kurt Russell's
you character. Were confused by this? Really?
Dude, there was so, like, at one point I'm like, what is Ramsey here for again? She's here for the computer program. And
Scott, were you not listening to Kurt Russell's bitching 5-minute exposition scene?
They needed her because she created this program, God's Eye, could use to find Jason Statham's character.
And they went through all that parachuting out of
Because it was the best plan they could come up with.
The story is so thin, but really for these kind of movies, as long as it even tissue thin will justify the carnage to come, then I'm fine with it.
Mm-hmm. I was just laughing because, I mean, and Kurt Russell, I love Kurt Russell. Anything he does is magic to me.
But you like gear now, don't you?
I do. But the fact that the government would call on fucking street racers to retrieve their extremely important high-tech device and hacker who has a device – that made no sense whatsoever, but I still loved it.
We can't poke any holes at this. The whole thing will deflate.
This plot is a screen door. It's just a screen door.
And who was the guy working for in the helicopter? Who was he with?
He was a mercenary group that kidnapped Ramsey because they wanted God's Eye.
So he was just a completely independent third party.
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Why, but then Jason Statham joined up with them when he saw that the Fast and Furious guys took whatever it was that Damon Jahanshu's character.
And managed to show up everywhere. Jason Statham apparently showed up everywhere.
With the most high-tech shit every time.
That was like backup. I'm like, they just parachuted from a plane. How did he fucking find them?
Did you not hear them say, he's a ghost?
He's not that good a ghost.
They had to drop. They had to airdrop in, but he was able to get there in like an SUV.
He's got skills, yo.
Seriously.
He's the transporter. Oh. I mean, he knows how to get from one place to the other.
Thank you, yes.
And I kept waiting for the opportunity where they were going to say, you know, Kurt Russell's character is actually maybe Statham's dad or something. You know, that would have made sense because then at least he was tipped. But at the end, when you know Kurt Russell's still a good guy, I'm sitting there going, how the hell is this possible that Statham's character can find them every time? Did he put a tracker in Vin's bicep or something?
He is a ghost.
So stupid.
He's the best Black Ops operative ever. Come on.
I love the opening scene.
We'll get there.
Yeah.
Let's
franchise additions, Jason Statham and Kurt Russell. Also the Game of Thrones lady, Natalie Emmanuel, who played Ramsay. Justin, what'd you think of the new additions?
Oh, shit. Jason Statham, I don't think I have ever seen him as fucking a powerhouse.
Yep.
As he was in this movie. I mean, he took on The Rock, and The Rock was getting rocked for a bit. He was just so tough and so just doing whatever it had to be done to avenge his brother. He scared the shit out of me.
You could say he even beat The Rock. I mean, The Rock ended up being blown out of a window.
Yeah, he was outsmarted.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So I was terrified. I thought he was fantastic. I loved Kurt Russell in this because he was so smarmy. You know, Kurt Russell realized I am in an action cheesecake movie. Mm-hmm. So there is no need for Tombstone level acting. I'm just going to sit here and grin it up. And he looked like he was having a blast. I seriously hope that he shows up in the next movie.
He gets shot and winks.
Yep. He just looks over, a little wink. Oh, so great. But as far as Natalie Emmanuel goes, it took me almost the entire movie before I realized who she was.
Really?
Yeah, it took a while because her mode of dress and everything is so different from her character on Game of Thrones.
She's naked in Game of Thrones.
She is so hot. Oh my, I didn't know she was that hot. But I loved her character of Ramsay. It's just, you know, everybody assumes that the big hacker is going to be a guy. And for it to be her was, you know, everybody's like, what? But it was a nice little twist. It's been done before, yes, but it was nice. I liked that. I thought she was a great little character. But if she doesn't show up again, yeah, I'm okay with that. But, you know, Kurt Russell, he should definitely come back. I think if Jason Statham does happen to tunnel through 35 feet of cement and steel, I would like to see him as maybe the last movie villain, you know, where they bring back all the villains who somehow didn't die in previous movies. I loved him.
Luke Evans is still alive when they showed in Jason Statham's opening where he had that great, and that was a beautiful one shot. Did you guys notice there's no cuts? That was a complete shot.
Right.
From his emerging from the hospital and the destruction that he caused. That was a beautiful, beautifully done shot. James Wan, who directed this, I think did a fantastic job.
Mm-hmm.
I was extremely surprised. Brian, what do you think? Who is your favorite?
Who is my favorite character?
Of those new additions.
Kurt Russell. I mean, he was like a bureaucratic Jack Burton. And that's what that's we love about point. Kurt Russell. And Jack Burton, for those who the name may sound familiar, was his Big Trouble in Little China character. And he wasn't as over the top as he was back then. But there was that semblance of Jack Burton. So... And that's the thing I love about Kurt Russell. So that was, you know, I personally was glad that he stayed the good guy the whole time.
Yes.
It was too predictable to say, okay, all right, well, this guy's here to save him. Oh, okay. He's their go-to government guy now. So, all right. Yeah. Of course he's going to be the guy that we don't know about. So of course he's the one that's going to be the mole or the guy that's tipping off information, whatever the case is, you know, the double crosser. So it was, I guess by being obviously the good guy, he was actually kind of being covert by standing out in, you know, plain sight. So in a way it was good to, it was refreshing to see that, all right, he's actually what he seems and he's trying to do good here. So, and he stayed a good guy throughout. So I was pleased about it. Kurt Russell. It's been a while since I've seen him. Yeah. So,
Scott,
Jason Statham to me was just the coolest addition. I haven't seen a cool collected evil villain in a movie in such a long time. And for a movie as over the top as this was, for him to not, for that to not be the most over the top thing was kind of cool. Like,
that's a good point. Yeah,
I mean, he was so entertaining. Just so, I just felt like he never broke stride from what he was. He just everything is like, I'm cool. I'm just so cool. Just soak in my coolness.
I really like the fight with The Rock, because I thought for sure walking into it, there's no way you're going to be able to convince me Jason Statham would stand a chance against The Rock.
Mm-hmm.
And they choreographed that thing perfect, because yep. I believed it when it was over. I'm like, all right, I guess he could kick The Rock's ass. Who knew?
Well, I love what James Wan brought to those fight scenes. I mean, when the camera would like twist over in time with the characters, flip. With the flipping and shit, mm-hmm. that just really brought a unique element to action scenes that I don't think I've actually seen that done before. Or not as well done as they did it in this movie.
In Hong Kong, Asian films, they do it all the time, but not in American cinema, no.
Right.
And I unfortunately knew Natalie Emmanuel was going to be the hacker as soon as they did the chase, because in the trailer, that's the girl they're saving. So, you know, it's kind of the giveaway, unfortunately. Now, what was your favorite scene this time around, Brian?
The goodbye to Paul Walker was the most emotional scene. I just kind of feel like that's probably all of our favorite scenes.
Yeah, you know? It was mine too.
It's not my favorite scene.
That's almost like a separate item, because to me that's kind of like it's almost like a separate little mini movie in there.
It is actually a separate item. It's called Paul Walker's Exit on the format. It's right there.
So, As far as the main scenes and stuff in the movie, the fight between Jason Statham and The Rock was much more crazy than I ever thought, you know, because the one between him and Vin Diesel was fantastic, and this one it's right up there with it, if not better.
I think it beats it.
Yeah, and you know, and to your point with the, you know, the spinning cameras that kind of rotate the perspective, and it kind of makes you feel like you're being thrown over a countertop with them, or whatever the case is at the time. It was really kind of a refreshing take on the fight scenes. And, you know, I just don't know. I mean, the only question I really had was why he just didn't go snatch a knot in his ass whenever he walked in and saw him on his computer. Why are you
really,
still talking
really careful
to him,
stepping? Yeah, he was careful stepping on that.
I'm like, just okay. You've been out of your office for 2 minutes, and then you come back, and there's some dude hacking your shit in the middle of the night. Why are you talking? You've got gigantic muscles.
The gun was right there. His gun was right next to him. He didn't want to give him the upper hand. What about you, Justin? What was your favorite?
Could have just ran and jumped him, I'm just saying.
Yeah, I think the scene that I had the most fun with was Jason Statham's opening in the movie, where you just see him kind of talking to his brother in the hospital bed. You think really nothing's awry other than his brother being hurt. And then as he leaves, he threatens the nurse and doctors that are there in the room that if, you know, he dies, then he's going to go find them. And as he walks out of the hospital, you just see all these people on the ground dead. You see all these security guards dead. Shit's blown up. By the time he gets out the front of the hospital and those windows all blow out, it looks like he's killed 100-something people just to get to his brother. And it's all in a day's work. Nothing doing. I was like holy shit.
Beirut in the
yeah. summertime. He's like a one-man SEAL Team 6. Shit. That's when I knew he was going to be a badass character.
Scotty?
Well, mine is one that I apparently didn't see the trailer that the scene was shot in, because I was blown away by the car jumping through not one but two skyscrapers in Abu Dhabi. Is that where it mm-hmm. took place? Because, mm-hmm. mm-hmm. like I said, I didn't see the trailer, so when I saw it happening – at first, I was like, oh, okay, they're going to jump a car through here. oh, that's pretty cool. It's that high up in the sky. How did you get a car up there? Okay, yeah, the car was in the little garage. But then the brakes go out, and they're going to go through the second one. It was like, no, I they're not going to go through it again. And they did, and just that was.
I thought for a second he was just going to keep wheeling around, just eventually landing on the ground just by building, turn around, building.
That would have been awesome. 45 minutes later.
It was so funny because, I mean, this – seriously, just put capes on these goddamn cars at this point because they're basically like superheroes.
Cars fly.
Yeah. Yes, they did. They flew all over the place. My favorite one was the plane scene. That entire scene was probably my favorite action scene in the entire franchise, honestly. And just from dropping out of the plane, the chase that ensued all the way up until Vin, for some reason, decides to take a chance in killing both of them. On that cliffside, I just thought that was the most exciting chase I've seen in this entire franchise. Did you know they dropped real cars?
I could believe it. It looked like it.
But yeah, it's like you don't even have to. We have CGI. But no, they dropped real cars out of a plane and then sent skydivers to film them as they fell to the ground.
It was so awesome.
It was so
especially
good.
Tyrese up there just pussing out. Mm-hmm. Sorry, that, I'm going to stay up here, guys. I'm sorry. I can't do it. Ludacris is like, oh, you're doing it.
That just seems like if that was my friend, I would beat the shit out of him when I hit the ground. It's like, you took a chance, man. It's a big chance. I'm pissing myself.
I didn't think we were going to see Tyrese again until it was all over. So when he actually appeared and helped Vin Diesel's character out, I was like, woohoo! He actually is going to be a part of this and not just come drifting at the very end going, what did I miss?
But that was one of my favorite parts of that scene, though, was everybody's landed, everybody's on the road, everybody's kind of in formation, and then you see Tyrese drifting past, you know, past the road and just kind of go, yeah, he's just wee, hey, help, you know, he's off, you know, off target and stuff.
That was so funny.
That was hilarious.
So we're talking about all the stuff that did work, Scott. What didn't work?
Well, it's this is a hard one to answer because in reality the whole movie wouldn't work like in real life. Mm-mm. But that's why the movie is fun. But the one thing that stuck out for me that I'm like, okay, come on, is when Vin Diesel drives that car off the cliff with Ramsey in the driver's seat, just gives her a motorcycle helmet, nothing for him. The thing barrel rolls down the side of a mountain, and he just gets up and walks out. I'm sorry.
Family.
I mean.
Well, later... I mean, the vehicle did have a really good...
Are you trying to justify this shit?
What I'm going to say is that the car did have a nice cage.
Okay, so it did have a couple of giant tires that were built into the center of the back of the car.
That's
that
right.
Really helped
it. He did have, I believe, a 5-point harness system. So, you know, it could do it.
It could happen. And she still looked perfect. She didn't have like a single cut or anything. He gets out and he's just like, woof, well, I'm
he's
glad I'm
shake
okay.
Shake it off. Shake it off.
So
but later in the movie, he drives it off of a parking garage and almost dies.
Yeah, that was the part that didn't work for me was the end there where, you know, we've gotten accustomed to ridiculous car jumps and jumping from one car mid air across an intersection to, you know, whatever, all kinds of crazy shenanigans, and you just accept them. Even in this movie with Ramsey jumping from Brian's car to the second car in the little shuffle game they were doing with the cars and the, you know, with the
goddamn ridiculous. That's what
absolutely
that was.
You know, but it was after that, it was just okay. I'm there. It's not like the area that the broken slabs that he was driving up once he hit turbo was in any sort of ramp formation. Okay. The slab was pointed upwards, but
they were inclined. That's a jump.
But you had to
just
bounce
like
over many other rocks to you know, to head up there, and you know, and then he's angled at a specific way, and of course he hangs
proper
the bag
speed.
Of right to hang the bag of grenades on some little coat hook that's hanging on the bottom of the helicopter.
Recognizes.
Yeah, the rock's like, oh yeah, shit. That boy knows what he's doing.
That's grenades.
He put a bag of grenades on that thing.
Yeah.
So stupid.
Yeah, that was almost as absurd as that scraping off the bomb that they did in Transporter 2 when he flipped the car over
so
that crane could just scrape it off the bottom. It's like, oh, Jesus, come on.
So, Justin, you can justify most of these. So what can't you justify?
Well, it's something that I mentioned in my review. This movie, as good as it was, just didn't have the same sense of fun that the previous movies had. And I just rewatched 5 and 6 this week. So those were really fresh in my mind. And, you know, I understand that, yes, this movie did have Paul Walker's death. So there has to be a million conversations about family and how important that is. And all these loving shots of Paul Walker with the sun gleaming off of him just right. But it seemed like everybody, you know, Michelle Rodriguez's character had angst because she couldn't remember everything. Vin had angst because of her. There was just a lot of downtime that, thank God, Tyrese would occasionally come in with a good joke, or Ludacris and him would have a good exchange, because otherwise there weren't a lot of jokes to be had. And I really like my Fast and Furious movies to be a bit more fast and funny.
You this gave was it kind an of fast and
ancient. Did you miss all of The Rock's lines?
Yeah, you gave it an 8.5. That's a pretty high
no,
score.
No, it's still a fun, fun movie. I'm just saying I wish that it had more lighter elements. And The Rock was only in probably 10 whole minutes of the movie.
Yeah, he was only in the opening and the beginning. And he flexes and makes cast pop off.
Yeah, I mean, that's fucking impressive.
The part that didn't work for me was when they're in the parking garage. And apparently, the parking garage has a little crack, and Vin Diesel stomps his feet on it and creates this fucking thing that cracks the entire thing and drops him down. It's so
that's his special Thunderfoot power. You didn't know he had that?
Oh, my God. I was in tears from laughing so hard. I'm like, this movie just took it to an 11.
Because he could calculate exactly where to stand correctly to do that so that Jason Statham would fall through, but he wouldn't.
Exactly, because Dom Toretto seems like a guy who can calculate.
Yeah.
Before we move on to the last question, I did one character we haven't even brought up yet. Granted, only in the film for probably 5 minutes, but Ronda Rousey?
Her acting
sucks. Oh, my God.
God damn, that fight is awesome.
The fight is awesome. Her acting was awful.
Oh, she's a terrible actress, but
she was good in Expendables.
She's a lot better looking than I thought she was.
In Expendables 3, she was really good, and she sucked here. I don't understand that.
You know, her job was to fight.
Yeah.
And she was amazing.
She's a great fighter.
Whoever Michelle Rodriguez's stunt person was, that was some awesome chick fight. I mean, they were beating the shit out of each other.
Mm-hmm.
Oh. I'm sorry, Brian. I kept interrupting you. I'm taking a breath.
Yeah, it was just, you know, to me, she wasn't given any forced lines like Gina Carano was. And I mean, I don't know if her lines were necessarily forced. They just felt forced every time that she was talking in the last one. It was she ruined a lot of scenes for me whenever she talked. And
I thought Rousey was worse. Acting wise.
Oh God, see, no, I mean, she wasn't on there long enough to for me to be worse or better, really. But I mean, it was just, she was mainly fighting. I mean, yeah, I mean, she had a couple of overly intense lines that were probably a little bit over the top. But she wasn't in there. I mean, she was a small enough part to where it didn't really matter. Carano was in there throughout the whole movie.
True.
And, you know, and had to bounce off of The Rock, so to speak. And she was a dud.
Paul Walker's exit, I think, people are still talking about his exit, the final 2 minutes. And anybody listening has already seen it. If you haven't, there's YouTube videos. I mean, everybody has gone out of their way to ruin this for everyone. What did you guys think about his exit?
The whole film, I didn't know how they were going to handle it. I didn't know if they were going to kill him off, they were going to give him a hero's death, or if they were just going to have him ride off into the sunset. And thankfully, they did the last of those options. And it was really so beautifully done, because at the end, you know, you could see in Dominic and everybody else recognizes that Paul Walker's character has changed. You know, he is the one who's got a family now to take care of, and a son who's there, a daughter on the way, a wife he loves. It's totally believable that his character would no longer carry on all the shenanigans that the rest of the Fast and Furious crew get up to. But at the very end, when they're kind of not really racing each other, but driving side by side, and Paul Walker's character takes that exit off to the left, I did a tear just rolled right down my cheek. And it was beautifully done, very nice send off. And I think that if he's able to see the what they did for him, he would be pleased with how they handled it.
Yeah, I kept watching the movie and going, okay, all right, here's where he dies. Here's mm-hmm. where they're writing him out. Here's where they're writing
him out.
I
never thought they were going to kill him off ever.
Yeah, and especially the big finale scene where his car is blown up by RPGs or whatever, by the helicopter. And I'm like, okay, well, this one, you know, in the back of my head, I'm going, this would be a good way of doing it because you don't need to show a body. You don't, you know, it's a clean blow up. It's believable.
He got rid of,
you know, Ramsey jumped out of, you know, and their little pirouette of cars where they spin around and Ramsey jumps from one to the other. And he's still technically
totally
in the car.
Believable.
Mm-hmm. Totally yeah. believable. And then
the missile moments.
Yeah. And then the missile blows the car up and you're like, I'm thinking, okay, there you go. That's it. And then you see him roll out. I'm going, well, crap. What are they going to do now? But the way they did it was just about perfect. I have kept expecting whenever Dom left and Paul Walker's car, you know, he pulls up next to him, that he would look away. He would kind of look down the road. He'd look back and maybe Paul Walker wouldn't be there. But I kind of like what they did where he just got off on the exit ramp and went. And I did. I bawled. I did cry. And I sat there through the credits a little bit longer than I probably would have just because I didn't want to walk out, you know, in a crowd of people with my eyes all red and puffy. So
I bawled.
I really bawled. Liked it, though. Really, really liked it.
I forgot how young he was in that first movie.
Oh,
yeah. The flashbacks were. Mm-hmm. Oh, he's. Yeah.
Like, you're a baby.
I bawled. I absolutely bawled. And I'm not ashamed of it. It was so well done. And honestly, I thought they paid him extreme tribute. I couldn't believe how close to the fourth wall they got with that ending. Mm-hmm. Because it really became like a Vin Diesel's goodbye, it felt like, which really worked, though. And I really thought there's not many franchises that I think could pull this off without it being ridiculous. And it's funny, I never thought I'd cry in a Fast and Furious movie, and I did.
You can tell obviously that they added that whole extra scene at the end. That because mm-hmm. if you watch closely, there's Paul Walker and the kid are in the scene in just for like a split second, and then go off camera. And then it's just the original cast, and you can tell that was filmed after the fact. And then the CGI, you almost couldn't tell that it was CGI.
Yeah, and there were a couple scenes throughout the movie where I think you got the feeling because you know his brothers doubled for him in the scenes where he wasn't around. So they mm-hmm. used CGI to put his face over his brother's face. There were a couple scenes where you could kind of tell that this was doctored. Mm-hmm. This wasn't Paul Walker, but I mean, for the most part, I couldn't really make the difference out.
Yeah. Right.
But the end scene, very much was CGI. You could tell that's not Paul Walker. They probably took that from one of the other movies and cause it's all
you
him
never
smiling.
Really see like his, I don't know about never, but I mean, there's very, very few scenes in that last little bit where you see his full face, you know, on the beach and stuff like that. So
he's in that car. He looks like an angel.
He is an angel.
He's just glowing like an angel.
Well, where should the series go from here, Brian?
Wrapping space. Where else?
Car chases in low gravity.
We don't get those moon carts.
We don't have any room on Earth for anything else. They've done it all. They've taken down giant airplanes. They've jumped out of giant airplanes. They've jumped from skyscraper to skyscraper. They've you know, taken out drug lords, government, you know, the mirror bad guy bizarro versions of themselves. The people that the siblings of people they've taken out. I mean, they've done it all. Space it's the only thing left. So
gotta fight aliens, man.
What about, yeah, does anybody have a real idea? Or do you really want them to go to space? Justin, Scott?
I actually had, I had car chases on the moon in mind. That, oh, I was like,
Jesus Christ.
I mean, honestly, because like, where else do you go from here? I mean, seriously, I just can't even fathom.
Boats?
I mean, obviously.
Boats? You can have water chases.
No, it always has to stay in the cars, you know, for the fight, for the big shots. I mean, in Fast Five, you had the whole dragging that fucking megaton safe through Rio de Janeiro.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite.
And then, you know, at the end of the last movie, they bring down a fucking plane on the world's longest ass
runway.
Runway. And now in this one, you're jumping from building to building in a single car. I mean, really, where do you, how do you top that? I mean, unless they're jumping from now plane to plane.
Oh!
Somehow. I don't know how you up the spectacle on this. I mean, or maybe they're jumping
special,
out of volcanoes.
Special, special vehicles volcanoes adapted for ice where they're jumping from crevasse over like crevasse curve over to, you know, other glaciers up on like Antarctica or the North Pole. Or something like that.
All I know, yeah, is all the people that were ripping on the James Bond invisible car, I don't want to hear shit from you ever again if you like this movie. Because that seems plausible compared to everything in this.
I mean, I know the next film is supposed to take place in New York City. So, I don't know, maybe they're going to start racing subway trains. I'm not sure what they can do, but I would love to see Mr. Nobody come back.
Bike messengers. Bike messengers.
They're all taxi drivers.
Oh, shit. It's going to be like crazy taxi.
Yeah, they've got like government pensions, but it's not quite enough to just like, you know, do whatever they want. So they have to have a little bit of income
real
coming
money's
in.
Run out.
Yeah, I mean, look at it. You know, they only made like $11 million in that Rio job. And you saw in Six where Roman had a fucking plane with his name all over it. So, you know, they've blown through all this money.
Right.
They've got to have something to supplement their income. And yeah, they've probably got a little bit of, you know, cash coming in from the government. So they got to take jobs. And in this case, they're in New York. They're driving taxis and
or police, you know, pizza delivery. If you don't get there in 30 minutes, it's free. Vin ain't going to fucking give that out of his paycheck. Mm-mm. So if you got to cut through a couple of corners and kill some people, well, that's just what happens.
This family needs pizza.
Pizza. I'd love to see Mr. Nobody come back. I would love to see him ask them to do another job. You know, the kind of black bag jobs that no one in the government or under a government paycheck can do, because if they're caught, then the government's implicated. But so that's why you hire these people.
I think that'll happen.
Another bad guy they've got to take down, maybe stopping terrorists. I don't know. But I definitely want to see Kurt Russell come back, because he's just so cool.
I actually think the series should end here. I think it's a perfect ending.
I would have completely agreed, but that wasn't an option. You said, where should it go? You didn't say into the exit door and done.
Yeah, you're right. They're not going to stop. I mean, they're just going to, I don't know. I feel bad for Jordana Brewster, because she's going to kind of have to be out of a job because of the Paul Walker thing, too, if she's with Brian. Yeah.
No, she'll just answer the phone whenever Dom calls to see how they're all doing.
I'm good, Tom. Yeah, I'll be there for the case. He's going to stay with the kids. Oh, that's good. Crazy Brian. Always be.
Yeah,
a dad.
Brian, I'll be right there. Anyway, got to go.
Yeah, Dom, Brian says hi.
Oh, shit. When Paul Walker, the first time you see him and he's revving that engine.
Yeah.
And then he's in a van. Just a little soccer mom van dropping the kid off.
Well, guys, we need to wrap it up. Any final thoughts?
Loved it. I think it's a fantastic franchise, and I feel so bad for people who can't get the stick out of their ass to enjoy these movies, because that's all they want to do is entertain you.
Mm. Yep. Enjoy the hell out of it.
I haven't had a desire to go back and watch the original movies, even with 5 and 6, but this one made me kind of consider wanting to go back and start from the beginning, mostly because of the Paul Walker exit, and I kind of want to see his, you know, his...
Be sure to watch Too Fast, Too Furious, because he says bruh like 8,600 times. Hey, bruh. Yeah. Hey, bruh. Hey, bruh.
Did Lucas Black look like he aged 30, 40 years?
Yes. If that was supposed to be at the same time as Tokyo Drift, my ass.
Jesus, he's old.
He's like Bronn from Game of Thrones. What the fuck happened?
He's got crow's feet and shit.
Yeah, but in his defense, it's been like 10 years or more since 3.
Do they not have makeup?
For the fucking years, apparently.
Yeah, but Bronn from Game of Thrones has been, you know, a year, and he looks like Brian May from Queen already.
All right, well, we got to wrap the show up. remember, guys, the next time, anything you want to say in parting? Okay. Thanks for listening to The Hollywood Outsider. Remember, go to thehollywoodoutsider.com or on iTunes, Stitcher, review us on iTunes. That'd be great. Next time you go to a theater, buy popcorn.
And take your family.
Family.
It's been a long day without you, my friend. And I'll tell you all about it when I see you again. We've come a long way from where we began.